Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're with Bruce DeTorres and World Stage on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. World Stage with Bruce DeTorres, exposing the tyrannies and exploring our power. And my guest this hour is Jane Celia Hatch, a writer, a whistleblower, a journalist, and author of a book called The Land of Broken Crystals and The Girl Who Knew Too Much. Jane is a survivor of family court, and she believes a system of torture and mind control called MKUltra has infiltrated most Western institutions, including our medical institutions, religious institutions, and also our judiciary. And she says that children are often the target of these mind control programs, as she has found through her research, and her personal experiences in the corrupt judicial system are highlighted in her book, The Land of Broken Crystals. And today I hope to talk to her at great length about shamanism. And Jane, thanks for coming back. How are you today?
I'm okay. How about you, Bruce?
Well, I'm most excited because a couple things. You were on my very first show here on TNT Radio back in January.
Oh.
And yeah, and it was a pleasure to talk about your book, which is published by Trine Day Publishing, and I am proud to be their marketing director. And I really wanted you back, as you know, to discuss all things shamanism. It's what it is. Yeah, what it is, what its history, its natural and organic and traditional occurrence and appearance under different names and modalities back to the beginning of human experience, a very, very natural thing. And also its usefulness in healing us of our psychic and emotional traumas, wounds, and catastrophes. So that's all on the table. We have a luxurious amount of time. And where should we begin?
I'm going to say that is a broad topic, but I think we can cover it.
Okay.
Well, I could hit on a few of the topics you brought up. I did a master's thesis on shamanism for Lesley University in Cambridge, which is pretty unusual, but they gave me my own team. But one of the things I found was that shamanism was located at almost all points on the earth at one time or another throughout history. So whether you're from Hawaii or Russia or Africa or Australia or, you know, Europe, or America, we all have shamanic roots. It's been called by different names throughout the centuries. You know, in South America, it's curandero. In Hawaii, it's the huna, and you know, medicine men with the natives. And that was one of the most interesting things I found. It was uniting, I thought, for all of us today that we do all have roots in shamanism at some point or another in history. It's the oldest form of spirituality on the planet, according to researchers like Mircea Eliade, who says it goes back 100,000 years. So I can start with that.
Well, you could, but let me dangle the option of starting rather from your personal experience, because that's what introduced you to, because first you experience it, and then you learn the concepts and the ideas about it.
Exactly. Well, a lot of it is inside you. You're sort of, and I believe we're all born with shamanic capabilities, but they atrophy or they're eliminated through religion. But I felt it very early on when I was 7 years old and my mother disappeared. I didn't know where she went or why. And so I kind of began my own little walkabout. I didn't call it that then. I just sort of lived outside. I had a nanny that didn't really know where I was. And my father was a businessman. So, and I lived in a rural area. So I spent a lot of time just down by a river and riding my neighbor's horse and being in the pine woods. And I felt love emanating from the natural world, whether it was rocks or trees or flowers. And that really was the beginning of shamanism for me, was being able to communicate with the natural world, because innate in shamanism is the belief that there's a life force in all of nature, whether it's fire, you know, the elements of fire, air, water, or trees or mountains or lakes or streams. There's a spirit and there's a force and there's a love energy. So when I was only 7 years old, I was already communicating. I could hear them speak to me. I could feel their love. And I also felt the spirits of the Native Americans who had lived in Massachusetts probably 100, 200 years before I did, but I could feel their spirits along this Indian Head River. It's the first chapter of my book, and it really is called Indian Head River. And I felt them protecting me. So I guess that might have been my first shamanic initiation, was losing my mother and having to develop these skills very early to survive.
I mean, just for the curious, what happened to your mother? Because all listeners know right now is like, oh, oops, your mother just disappeared. Well, what happened?
Yeah. Well, it was in the early 1960s, and it was a divorce, but it was a very contentious, I didn't know it at the time. She had had an affair and there was problems in the marriage to begin with. She had been married since she was 16. And, you know, my father was sort of a rigid, Yankee kind, and she was sort of a spirited, passionate. I don't think she ever really got to be, a teenager, a young woman. She'd been having children. And so this was sort of an outlet, and I didn't know anything had going on except for she disappeared and nobody told me why. And suddenly she was very bad. She was sort of matricided in the sense, not only was she physically gone, but I began to hear rumors about, oh, she was bad. She was this, she was that. And it wasn't. And then my father got custody, which was very unusual in that time. And he did it in very nefarious ways. So she essentially was just, she wanted to come home, but she was just sort of ostracized and matricided. And I was not given really any idea, and I didn't figure it all out. It took me decades to figure it out.
Thank you. I wanted to get that on the record in this conversation for folks who were curious of, well, what'd you do? You misplaced your mom? You know, it's a, you know, that reality happened. Right.
No. It was a very contentious divorce and custody. And she eventually dropped the custody when she found out my father was going to put me in court. And so, yeah, that was what happened.
And that's the major story in your book, if I recall, right?
It is. It's a major theme of women being matricided, essentially, especially in the courtroom. And, you know, there's fathers that are arguing vehemently from the other side that they're not getting equal. But what I've seen, what happened to my mother, and then eventually what happened to me and my daughters, it was the one thing I was absolutely sure I would never let happen to me happened. And then I did like a 30-year study, and I realized it was happening, not just, it happened to me in Maine, in West Bath, Maine, at a court system up there. But it was happening not just in Maine, but all through the U.S. And I realized it was happening in Europe, where courts were systematically removing good parents from children when they were very young and placing them, you know, in foster care with a non-parent, with eventually, you know, CFYD or whatever social services is called. And I just found this pattern that was happening in the West, and I was like, how are they doing this? How? And that's when I began to investigate mind control systems. Trauma mind control was also happening in the court system, which I don't think anybody is examining right now. They're courtrooms.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Describe it with a little more detail. How is mind control being practiced or exercised by and in the courts?
Okay, well, I will speak from my experience and some of the women I know that have gone through is they, and I got to backtrack a little bit because I believe the systems came in from Nazi Germany and then they were by American scientists and then they were filtered, according to researchers, into 80 different institutions in our country, political, educational, and I believe judicial. So there's a template from a system that was perfected almost in torture camps. So, but they couldn't do it outrightly in America. They were doing it in Canada, but not here. So what
Jane,
they
and well, if you wouldn't mind, make this what you're about to summarize pretty tight, but full, to leave plenty of time to explore shamanism.
Well, what they, I can tell you what they did to my daughters. They used a system of mind control where if they wanted to come see me, the stepmother would punish them. And the court systems would back that up. And so would the other people that I feel were involved. Or say, my daughters would tell a therapist, you know, I want to be with my mother. She'd say, well, she's the daughter's being codependent. So that there was a system of punishing using trauma, and the trauma could be the stepmother. So you'll never see your brothers again if you're here when your mother comes to get you. And these were reinforced by the therapist, by the guardian, and by the judge, because I felt they had a goal for my daughters, which was trafficking. They were being groomed and traumatized for trafficking, which never
What makes
happened.
You say that? Well, but based on all your other research, you've seen that a lot, or you heard of it a lot.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen it a lot, and I've seen children, little girls die in Maine. They were under trauma-based mind control, taken from their mother and given to foster. There was a very famous case. Where children have died that have been taken and putting in foster care. But I saw it in my daughters because I saw the guardians. She was talking, she was sexualizing her conversations with my daughter. One of them was only 7 at the time. And my daughter would tell me, and I'd say, that's not right. And then the stepmother started to do the same thing.
Let me ask you a question, Jane, real quick. This is familiar, and that's because I believe, and I'm happy to discover this. We reviewed this in your appearance on my show back in January. So, if it's cool with you, I want to refer folks to that. They can find the playback on my show's page on tntradio.live.
Right.
And use this as a segue into how shamanism can help with the effects of such mind control, and we're going to be coming up to a break in a couple of minutes, so just be ready for that interruption. But I guess I want to start with from the kind of like, okay, what is shamanism? You already kind of described that. It's the belief that there is a spiritual life inside everything, and definitely related to, you know, how you learned what it is and its history and its applicability, its usefulness, the vital part of reality that it represents and that it can be for us.
I think it can be revolutionary right now. I think we need it now more than almost any time in history.
How so and why? Yeah.
Well, because there's a collective mind control going on the planet and in all of our systems, I think, whether it's judicial or political or even the so-called pandemic we just went through. I saw that as a major mind control event. And what happens is they get, you know, they're getting into your head, and it's like a repetitive process of fear, 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 like they did to my daughters and a lot of other children. And then they replaced the fear with the solution. In this case, the fear was COVID and the solution was the vaccine. So stepping back, I saw that as a major mind control event. And the solution could have been, if you were in your body and you were in your gut instinct and you were in your shaman center, your body was going, no, no, this isn't. This is a lie. This is not real. And you're
right now, Jane, I am right now. My body is going, yes, 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 because I'm loving this conversation with Jane Celia Hatch. We are going to take a little break now. Jane wrote The Land of Broken Crystals and The Girl Who Knew Too Much. And we'll be back soon here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what James Freeman is talking about on The Freeman Report.
Putin threatens response over Britain's toxic tank shells. Now, the crux of this story is that the UK's Minister of State for Defence, Baroness Goldie, has announced that the Challenger 2 tanks Britain is supplying to Ukraine will be armed with depleted uranium shells. Such rounds are highly effective at defeating modern tanks and armoured vehicles. Well, golly gosh, isn't that dandy? Who would have known that depleted uranium would be good at destroying tanks? Unless, hang on, haven't we used these shells before? Weren't they responsible for significantly increased cancer rates in Iraq? No, surely not. The British government would never supply weapons for use in a country that is claiming to help, would it? Wouldn't that be a huge contradiction? Supplying cancerous weapons to be used in the very same lands, yes, the very same lands that are home to the people that it claims to be supporting. No, no, dear boy, you must be mistaken. Well, no, because this is exactly what is happening.
The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
TNT Radio.
Alexa is like a personal secretary.
Thank you.
Just without the HR visit when you slap her on the butt.
I smell a lawsuit.
Whoa!
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Bruce Tatoris. This is World Stage, and my guest is Jane Celia Hatch. And we are talking about...
Hello.
Hello. And we are talking about shamanism. Right, Jane?
Right. That's correct.
Right. Right. Well, it's and in all seriousness. Now, imagine you've got a classroom. They are teenagers, and they're eager to know, how does life work? How does reality work? How does sanity work? How does health work? Is that a great way to approach and answer the question, what is shamanism, and you know, how can I enjoy it, and what can it do for me?
Not really. I would approach it a little differently. We were going along the track of how this related to sort of saving my daughters from this matrix, this mind control event.
And I'm all ears.
That,
yeah.
I can show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could show. Yeah. So, and then which is going to bring us much deeper into shamanism, other than that just there is a life force right. in all beings. So another element of mind control trauma, or any trauma whatsoever, according to shamans, is something that causes shock. So children or anyone under trauma-based mind control has gone under multiple shocks. Now, from a shaman's perspective, every shock has the potential to create what we call, shamans call, soul loss. And this is what when it gets serious. So every time you have a shock, and this happens to war veterans, sexual abuse victims, even a surgery can cause an element of soul loss. So with each soul loss, you're losing more of your soul. And I'm sure you've all heard the the saying, they're only half there. Well, from a shaman's perspective, that's true. A lot of war veterans are half there because they've had so much shock that half, you can't live with less than half of your spirit in your body. If you lose it all, of course you die. But there's a lot of people walking around, a lot of children under shock, trauma, and soul loss. So what the shaman can do is travel through the web of life. And there's three major worlds, lower world, middle world, upper world. The shaman can travel to re-engage with that lost soul part. We actually go and talk to the soul part, ask them why they're there, and often they'll go to the site of the trauma, you know, whether it's car accidents, they go there. For my kids, you know, when I did soul retrieval for them, they had gone back to where our house where we experienced love and happiness and peace. So after I was denied almost all access to my daughters with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, other than they sort of said I could prophesize and I could dream. I was literally tried as a witch in 1989. And so I couldn't resource therapists. Everything had failed. So I had to sort of become like the super spiritual person. So I was traveling through the spirit world and doing soul retrievals for my daughter because I could see that had so much soul loss that they were very malleable. And then I would also travel through the spirit world and disconnect and disengage and untangle the energy cords the perpetrator had put on them. And this is on all children. Yeah.
Can you describe how you... Can you describe how you even discovered that was possible, how you learned to do it, and describe what is that like?
I can. I had to heal myself first because I had multiple soul loss, multiple trauma after this court case. It was beyond shocking. And so I found this shaman on the top of a mountain in Freedom, Maine, and I was directed to her by other people. And she had this little yurt and drums and all this. And I walked in and I said, I've got to trust somebody because I didn't trust anyone at that point. But I said, I'm going to trust her. And so she brought back my soul pieces that had been gone into the universe from the court system and from my early. So she was returning all kinds of parts of me. And then she journeyed into the spirit world. So I healed first. And then she started teaching me, and then I found other teachers. Sandra Ingerman was one of my teachers. She might be listening now. She's and a PhD, Ann Drake, Ellie Knowlton. There was all kinds of people that sort of put me back together, like the bionic woman. And then I was taught how to do what they did for me. I was taught how to journey without any kind of drugs, just to the drum beat, into these other alternatives because they were the only way I had to save my children. It was the only thing that was left.
What did you hear? What were you told about shamanistic healing like that made you want to seek a shaman?
Well, I think it was my early experience as a child in nature that I absolutely knew there was love somewhere. It had been stripped of me most of my life, but I knew it was in the earth. I could feel it in animals. And I think I had other lives where I had developed this, so it was natural. And then my early childhood, because I could always find love in the woods, you know, at the beach, sitting in a tree when I was a little girl alone, or sitting under a lilac bush, I could feel love. And I intuitively trusted the process. It was very organic. I didn't have any, you know, role model out there, no Native American. It was all inside of me that I trusted this process. And I was stripped of other ways. So I had to go forward somehow. And that's how I went forward.
Can you describe, if you're comfortable with it, Jane, describe the experience that the shaman led you through, or in general, or if it's uncomfortable, don't. But I'm fascinated. What was that like for your own healing before you learned how to do it to help others?
Yeah, I mean, those are the things that are easy to talk about because, as Mircea Eliade said, a famous researcher, shamanism is the techniques of ecstasy. So when you are in a shamanic state, you're often experience ecstasy unless you're doing very hard depossession work or things like that. So I was lying on these furs, and I remember looking up through this like chimney hole or something, and the snow was coming down. It was the top of a mountain in Maine, and I closed my eyes, and I just remember her drumming, and I was sort of falling into a semi-conscious state. And I remember seeing what I later learned were my power animals. I would see a bobcat. I saw a deer. It was like all of my power returning to me. I would see flashes of color. Whereas she was really doing the journey, I was being receptive. She said she journeyed back to when I was 7 years old and I had lost my mother. And a part of my soul had to leave my body to survive the impact. It's an intelligent, adaptive strategy for survival. Psychologists call it disassociation. Shamans call it soul loss. So my little girl part was, walking along the river. So she went and brought that part back. She said there was two or three soul losses from going through custody with my own children. So she brought those back. Shamans generally bring them back in a crystal, and then she blew them into my heart, and then she blew them into my third eye, and then she drummed around me to seal in my lost soul parts, to make them part of me. And honestly, when I woke up from that, I felt like myself for the first time in my life, like I was all in one body.
When she was drumming, so I knew then, was she leading you through any kind of like a guided meditation, or was it just the
No, I was being healed. And at that point, she was not taking me on a journey. You know, I've gone on thousands of journeys since then. But in that particular time, she was just healing me.
And the
and bringing back
that
my soul.
Right. And maybe you were drifting into a semi-conscious state when you had those visions of the animals that you saw. And then she returned with the crystal and she blew it into your heart. And then she sealed it.
She blew my souls into my heart through the crystal.
Right. And you said when you woke up or regained full consciousness, you just said that you felt like your full self for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm. In my life that I could remember since my mother left. Yeah. I was totally present. It was like I was looking out through someone else's eyes. I was looking around the room.
Have you been that way since?
On and off. Like I've had soul loss on and off, and I've gone off course. But definitely, I got stronger and stronger and stronger. And I realized if I'd had these soul losses early on in my life, I probably wouldn't have gone through the same ordeal my mother, because the more soul loss you have, the more trauma you attract, because you're not home inside your body to navigate. You're malleable and you're open to mind control, and you're open to people being able to manipulate you. So soul loss, it's just it's a huge factor in our society that's not being addressed.
Is it fair to conclude? Wait, Jane, is it fair to conclude that the purpose of trauma-based mind control is to inflict soul loss so people can be manipulated?
Yes. And to shut down neural pathways to the trauma. And they may know, they pretend they don't know, but they may know that's very advanced spiritual and very ancient knowledge that when the soul it leaves, you become a pawn. You can be manipulated. You can be, forced to do things you don't want to. Your will is lost because you've lost your spirit, and they may know exactly what is happening on the spirit level. and some of these perpetrators.
And the phenomenon of burying the memory of the shock or the trauma, that's, I think that's part of this, no?
It doesn't, well, one thing shamans will do, they will negotiate with the lost soul to tell them when you come back, this is, you know, what you may experience. But it's safe now. It's safe to come back. That's a big dialogue between the shaman and the lost soul part is.
But I was asking, kind of how I was asking about the person who suffers the soul loss. Can they consciously, they go forward with their life, but they don't maybe not even remember the trauma that inflicted the soul loss.
Yeah, they can. Yes. Yeah. They can just, bury it. And then it also, there's all kinds of symptoms of soul loss, and one is addiction. So our society is very addictive to, you know, drugs, alcohol, sex, and especially prescription medication because.
And cell phones and entertainment. Loss, yeah.
Yeah, we could go on. But that's a sign to a shaman that there's soul loss, because with your spirit fully in you, you feel fully alive and, you know, you feel like your full God self.
And you can be relaxed. There's a lot of traumatized people who are clenched fists, right? And they're angry, and they're explosive for no reason. And
yes,
right.
All PTSD right, continue. Is a sign of soul loss. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the psychological way of describing it, like disassociation. But yours is the shamanistic vocabulary of it is so relatable as an experience. Well, if you want to pick up your journey, I'm fascinated, you know, after you were and did you have many sessions like that to integrate describe your healing most fully and then everything else?
So I went back for several soul retrievals, and then the shamans went in and disconnected negative energy cords to my perpetrators. They would return my power, which for shaman is often power animals, ancestors, angels. Your power animal changes throughout your career as a shaman. And so at that point, I think she had returned a jaguar and a bobcat. So the more of that power you have, the stronger you're getting. So I'm getting stronger spiritually. I'm emotionally, spiritually getting stronger. And so I got to the point where, like, I can do this. This is how I'm gonna save them who are under what I would call satanic mind control. But we won't go too far into that.
Well, we could, because so I was just about to ask you, like, on your website, janeceliahatch.com, you have your thesis on shamanism that you wrote, The Potential Healing Effects of Core Shamanism for Women Who Have Experienced Trauma. Do you have other resources there so people could start to study how to self-shamanize themselves, or how to find... how to find the equivalent experiences to retrieve their lost portions of their soul? Is that what's on your website along those lines?
Well, there's quite a bit about soul loss and soul retrieval in my thesis. A lot of shamans will tell you only a shaman can return your soul to you. So the basic thing to do is to connect with a shaman, and telling you want soul retrieval. And most of my teachers were core shamanism teachers, and which means they were taught in one specific method that was brought to this country through Michael Harner, who was a student in California and had traveled throughout the world finding a commonality between shamans. And he extracted that and created core shamanism. And all of those teachers are taught soul retrieval. So if you suspect you have soul retrieval, I mean, some people say you can do your own, you can do your own journey, but my experience when you first start this is to have another practitioner bring your soul parts back, because it is, you have to be trained. There's a training that goes on, that it would take too long to go into now, but
Jane, you have to know what you're doing. Yes, and I'm going to bring all the souls who are listening back after this short little break. We are speaking with Jane Celia Hatch. Her website is her name, janeceliahatch.com, and her book is The Land of Broken Crystals and The Girl Who Knew Too Much, back after this break here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Where have all the swamp rats gone? Long time shilling. Where have all the swamp rats gone? Tearing us down.
No, seriously, where are they?
The lugubrious John Forbes Carey.
The pestiferous Peter Strzok.
The diabolical John Brennan.
Die Spy, Yertle the Turtle, Cocaine Mitch himself.
Where are all these people? Where's AOC? Where's the rest of the squad? Where's Alana? Where's Incest Omar? Where are all the people that have been occupying the front pages for the last 6 years? Mysteriously quiet. Where are they? More importantly, what are they up to? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Many power grids worldwide are in grave danger of collapse from the growing amount of intermittent power sourced from wind turbines. Covering the countryside and offshore coastal regions with wind turbines is insane. English journalist James Dellingpole has described wind farms as a cancer, and that he wants to raise public awareness of just how disastrous these bat-chomping, bird-slicing eco-crucifixes are in every single respect. These remarks nail the reality of wind farms to a T. When the wind doesn't blow, there is no power. And when gale-force winds hit, the turbines are shut down. It's a Goldilocks moment. When the winds are just right, the power produced is at an optimum. In reality, industry and households require power 24/7, not just when the wind blows.
You're listening to Bruce DeTorres on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And with me is Jane Celia Hatch. And Jane, you were describing how soul retrieval is best accomplished in the hands of an experienced shaman. On your website, do you have resources where one could find such a shaman?
Well, I'm still doing some work, mostly writing, but I am doing some shamanic work. And I can also, they can email me. If I'm not able to do it, I can certainly make recommendations, both on the East Coast, and I'm in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Do you want? Are you comfortable giving your email address here, or should they find it on your website?
I can give it here. It's just a little long. but the best thing to do is go to janeceliahatch.com and then go under contact. And in certain cases, you know, I can also, I'll probably call someone if they email so that I can just get a feel for what's going on energetically.
Wow.
But they can call me, and if I'm not doing healing work at that point, I could probably turn them over to people that I respect, some of my teachers. And
lovely.
My own daughter is actually learning this, but I'm not quite sure she's ready for that yet.
Well, sure. The powerlessness, the soul loss in America is epidemic. What do you think of that claim? Because that's my impression.
Yes, I think it is. And I think a lot of it has to do with social media. Social media has brought us out of our heart, out of our soul, out of our spirit, and into our minds. And that is where we are the most vulnerable, of course, to mind control. So we're over-focused on this intellectual, cerebral interaction with thousands of people, some we don't even know. And then there's all kinds of AI going on, and with 5G, and so people are being led in all these directions. And, you know, I have to say the biggest mind control event ever, I believe, was the so-called pandemic and then the vaccine. They were both major mind control events. I feel like if we didn't have social media, they wouldn't have gotten as far as they did. And if they, you know, because if we're in our body and in our heart, your body's going to go, no, that mask is not good. No, and I hope I can say all this on the show.
Yes, you can. This is a free speech platform.
Thank goddess for that they're still out there. And so because we were under mass media control, we've been led to trauma and consequently soul loss, in my opinion. And we're wandering around without our souls.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this theory, this analysis, which is mine and others, that humans were born to be free in nature, and the public school experience, stealing us from our families as young as possible and basically imprisoning us during our formative years, is a trauma of devastating, possibly permanent proportions. And even folks who are functioning in terms of they can make a living, they can get to their couch after dinner, and they can, you know, watch TV all night, who could be listening to this conversation and think to themselves, I'm not traumatized.
Yeah.
The listlessness, the powerlessness, what do you take of that accusation of the public school experience?
I think you're 100% accurate. I mean, I was repelled by school. I just had this gut feeling that everything was a lie, even when I was a teenager. And I think that most everything they teach in school is a lie. It's fabricated, or it's created by the conquerors. And
Jane,
I had one daughter
Jane.
Who wouldn't go either. And that did not go through the school system, and she's the one that cannot be put under mind control. So I think it's a platform for mind control.
Well, before evaluating whether what is taught is a lie or not, my contention is it doesn't matter. It could be the truth, but the fact that kids are immobilized in a room when they should be living and breathing and walking and running and playing and exploring in reality is the trauma. They could be told all the truth in the world, but humans, we learn what we do. We don't learn what we're told, especially during those formative years.
What we feel.
Yeah. So if you want to drive a child out of their heart and out of their body, sit them in a room and tell them, you've got to be still and listen to this boss, this authority, this teacher. So there's the injury. There's the shock. There's the trauma. There's the soul loss, according to your good friend, Bruce.
I think there's multiple layers of trauma in a school setting. You know, it's getting worse and worse. But yes, I think the fact you're just sitting inside, you know, it's sort of militaristic, and you're shutting down, you know, your shaman center, you're shutting down your heart center, and you're beginning to live just from your head. And again, that's a setup for mind control, because you're out of your body. You're in your head, because that's what the school setting demands.
From this place and feeling and understanding that we just described, Jane, what's the good news about shamanism and the hope for individuals and the hope for Americans specifically, right here, right now, today, going forward? What would you tell us, or what pictures would you paint for us about what's possible?
Well, I think America is facing what I faced as a mother in a corrupt judicial system, is that all systems are shutting down. You know, all systems are going to become unavailable. You know, the medical, the pharmaceutical, the banking. And so when all of those shut down, we're going to have to go back on ourselves again. And in a way, that's going to be an evolutionary leap. And we're going to go back into our bodies, back into our, you know, our communities. I mean, I've seen this in visions of that, of the future. When this, you know, 5,000 year reign begins to disintegrate, we're going to be reborn into, you know, smaller communities with different values, different systems, because these systems are clearly basically getting psychopathic or satanic or whatever word you want to use. They're not functioning and they're falling. It's sort of before Rome fell. It looked very hedonistic like this. And I think we're going to fall back on our communities. And I think the way forward is your intuition. Like, what does it feel like in your body before you accept any kind of injection or any kind of direction or proposal by your government? Like, what does it feel like? You know, we have to disconnect from the hive mind that's happening right now in this country, with at least half of the people are under this massive hive mind control. And it's like watching lemmings go over a cliff. But if you come back to your power, your God self, you know, and every single one of us is hardwired to be a shaman. And I want to read my foreword of my book. It's just one paragraph about how we are all designed to be shamans. And I wrote, a 2021 groundbreaking study conducted by Dr. Richard E. Harris, PhD, of the University of Michigan, using control groups and EEG waves, conclusively revealed that the underlying neurobiology of a shamanic state of consciousness is distinct and measurable. This study scientifically verifies that the human brain, without the usage of any psychedelics and often just to the accompaniment of a drumbeat, is naturally wired to experience profound worlds beyond the five senses. So in a way, we have everything within us to orient and make the right decisions going forward on this planet. Get back into your shaman center.
And
that's get out of your head.
Yeah. Well, it raises the question of trusting oneself. And
yes,
I love it as a companion to the other practice that leads to self-trust, which is make a million decisions. You'll learn by trial and error. You'll develop your judgment, and then you'll trust yourself to make decisions. And do a gut check, like you're saying, and try to feel what your body and your heart, and that would be faster than taking the time to make a million decisions to develop your judgment. Do both, but definitely start with trusting your body, trusting your heart. And to consciously
it's more
know
body, because your heart, and I used to think this, your heart is basically involved with emotions, and emotions can be manipulated by images on the TV, but you'll have, even beyond that, a shaman feeling, which means you're connected to universal consciousness. So that
through
is
your
the
body.
Deepest form of wisdom, through your body.
That's exciting, because, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all have it. And it's just been, you know, it's kind of beat out of us through school and other political, religious, you know, religion says, you know, it's a sin to see a spirit, you know, and I think Christ said, you know, do as I do. You can do what I do and more. And I think this is what he meant. We have so much power, but it's been labeled a sin. Religion has stomped it, tried to stomp it out. I mean, they're still trying to kill off shamans, you know, during the so-called pandemic in Australia. The Aborigines were being starved and shot, and so they hate anyone that has, I shouldn't say they and hate.
Right.
There is a general oppression of those who know the deeper truths.
Right.
Which is often shamans.
Yeah. And those who want to use and abuse and exploit others do not want others to know reality, which is our individual awesome power and potential.
Yes.
Simply because we are living beings. I believe in a living universe, which is an expression of an eternal and unharmable infinite essence of love and joy and happiness that blossoms and creates and, you know, demonstrates itself to itself by all experience. And so much of this could result, the door opens with the ancient advice, know thyself. And all of the culture and the school experience and the media and the cell phones and the social media are all to distract us and fill us with the content by those who want to control, lead, manipulate, exploit, harm, enslave, etc., etc.
That is the negative side of this worldwide 5G. When I was very young, we were Christian Scientists, and I was taught then, which I still believe, I don't follow Christian Science entirely anymore, that's for sure, but that love is the only truth in the universe. And for a while, I thought that was crazy. I left the church when I was 13, and then going through life, I realized, I was taught evil did not exist, so it was ironic. I had to go down the deepest holes to the most evil. But I realized that love is the only thing that's eternal and forever. And we are part of that love. God is love to me, and we are love. And we're being mesmerized into thinking we're these unhealthy beings that should have nothing and be nothing, and instead we are these vibrant, powerful, godlike beings. If you are in your shaman center, you know that and feel that, and all the universe conspires for you. And that's like a shamanic meaning. To me, it means, you know, your ancestors, the angels, your power animals, everything will conspire to support you. When you call upon free will universe, you have to call upon them.
These are the delightful things that are possible when one pursues a spiritual imagination from any angle or from any cause or for any reason. It's the wisdom handed down for centuries by the poets and the mystics, and the seers and the soothsayers, etc.
And shamans who... recorded goes back 100,000 years, paleographic and all kinds of, writings. And it's very, very old, old knowledge. It's not new age. It's very old.
What have you heard or seen or make of folks who've had near-death experiences and they describe what they experienced?
I believe it's very authentic. I think that they're, because shamans, they call it the little death. Anytime you leave your body to do work for someone else or to heal, it's the little death. You're actually leaving your body and going into the spirit world. So a shaman will, thousands of times experience to a certain degree the NDE. They don't go all the way, but it's a parallel experience to a certain degree. So it's like a common experience for shamans to go into that vibration and to, another thing that shamans do is psychopomping. We help spirits who are stuck on this level where we all are, like you call them ghosts, to go over to God. So we actually bring them to the light if they're stuck here and they want to move on. So that's a very, 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 believable common human experience.
As is dreaming when we sleep, is that in some way a soul traveling and returning?
Yes. Your sub-soul, they call. Some people, they go in their whole soul, and that's called astral projection, which is a little bit different. But the dream state, it's usually your sub-soul, a piece of your soul traveling the universe to get information to maybe do healings. And also your guides can access regular people much more readily when you're dreaming, because your conscious mind is shut down. It's not saying, oh, that's not real. I didn't see that. I didn't feel that. I didn't hear that. They can access you during the dream time, all your spirit guides.
Jane.
And power animals.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, thank you. What's your book again and your website real fast?
The Land of Broken Crystals and the Girl Who Knew Too Much. And my website is my name, janesiliahatch.com. And you can buy the book through me or through Trine Day Press or any other major book outlet like Amazon or Goodreads. It's out there.
Thank you so much, Jane. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. And
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you. Yeah. And we'll be back after some news here on TNT Radio.